Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Not all tribes have weaving traditions, but for the ones that do, weaving is usually an intricate part of their culture. Many Native weavers, whether they're Navajo, Pueblo, Thlinkit, or Salish, they continue their craft today to honor their ancestors. Does your tribe have weaving traditions? We'll talk today with some master weavers and learn more about how their work connects them to others and their tribe. Join us as we talk about traditional weaving right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Yankton Sioux Tribal Chairman says understanding the cultures of Native and non-Native people is a first step in closing the gap between the groups. Robert Flying Hawk addressed the South Dakota Legislature Thursday during the second State of the Tribes address. Lee Strubinger has the story.
Flying Hawk calls for unity between state government and the tribes. He says teaching more Native American history will help bridge the cultural divide. Flying Hawk says many of the reservations are challenged by methamphetamine addictions, but more increasingly heroin. He says he wants South Dakotans to reflect on what makes us different and to recognize those differences.
They're there, but they're not visible at times, so I'm just trying to share with the thoughts that I had that we, as a Native people and the mainstream, can both benefit from understanding each other and the life that we live, and that by understanding those, we will become stronger as a nation.
Flying Hawk says many of the challenges between Indian country and the rest of the state go unseen, but are very real.
As we get into jobs, into schools, into stores, just a mental idea about seeing color, and that's a basic challenge that we can overcome.
Flying Hawk also called for help with Native health care and proposals that spur local economies on the reservation. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre, South Dakota.
Nine children from the Havasupai tribe in Arizona and a legal rights organization are suing the federal government over what their lawyers say is a dismal failure to provide basic education at a Bureau of Indian Education school. The lawsuit filed Thursday claims the school teaches only English and math without any instruction in other subjects. The suit claims the school occasionally shuts down for weeks at a time and does not have adequate textbooks. Alexis De La Cruz is a staff attorney with the Native American Disability Law Center, one of the plaintiffs.
We're asking for a qualified and appropriately trained teacher in every classroom. We're asking that the BIE develop and implement a system for the delivery of special education services to all students with disabilities. We're asking for culturally relevant wellness and mental health support for all the students.
De La Cruz claims there are similar problems at other BIE schools across the country and says the suit has broad implications. The lawsuit names the Bureau of Indian Education, the U.S. Interior Department, and the principal of Havasupai Elementary School. The Interior Department has not responded to requests for comment on the lawsuit. Meanwhile, the Interior Department announced today the approval of the first land-into-trust application in Alaska. The department approved a parcel owned by the Craig Tribal Association in Craig, Alaska, into federal Indian trust status. The decision comes under a revised rule for Alaska tribes to acquire land-into-trust. Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Lawrence Roberts says the journey to the decision has been long, and now tribes in Alaska have the same opportunity as those in the lower 48. The Craig Tribal Association purchased the property from an individual landowner in the 1990s and developed the land, which includes a facility used as office space. According to the Interior Department, the decision does not make the parcel eligible for gaming or does not impact state law enforcement authority. The state of Alaska had long opposed land into trust, which included taking the issue to court. Last year, the state dropped litigation. Tribal leaders point to land into trust as exercising self-determination with the ability to enhance the health, safety, and welfare of their people and promote economic development. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Navajo weavers use sheep's wool in a method that churns out intricate tapestries of bold and elegant patterns. Chilkat weavers utilize wool, goat hair, and even tree bark for a complex, time-consuming process to create robes. And many other cultures access the materials available to them from their environment to create clothing, blankets, belts, and other useful and ceremonial textiles. And this hour, we're going to get insights into several traditional Native techniques from different tribes. And we want to hear from you, too. Does your tribe have weaving traditions? And do you have a traditional woven piece in your home? What does it mean to you? The number to join the conversation on Native weaving is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line from Pagosa Springs, Colorado, is Lily Hope, and she is a weaver and teaching artist, and she is Tlingit. Welcome back to the hour, Lily.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Lily, you are here to tell us a little bit about Chilkat weaving, and I know a lot goes into it, but let's go ahead and describe a little bit about what it looks like or how you can distinguish it maybe from other tribes. Go ahead, Lily.
Okay. Well, to recognize a Chilkat robe or a Chilkat weaving, you have to know a little bit about Northwest Coast art, or the art that the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian peoples do in Southeast Alaska. We have a style of artwork called form line. It's very stylized. There are eyes and mouths and animals depicted, but it's a flow, like you could trace your finger along the entire design, really. You'll have to Google that and look up form line design or Northwest Coast art so that you can see what this is. But Chilkat robes draw from that form line art and bring our clan crests and ceremonial designs onto a woven textile. So you'll see sometimes bears or frogs or humans depicted in this very stylized design, this form line design. And we use a turquoise or green color, a yellow, a nice bright yellow color, and then the natural white of the mountain goat, and a nice black. So those are the four colors involved in the Chilkat robe. And the robes can take anywhere from 1 to 4 years to make. They are usually 5 or 6 feet across and 3 or 4 feet woven down, plus a couple more feet of fringe.
And so just given that, I think a story is starting to develop of just how much goes into this and what you use. And folks, maybe you're a weaver and you also want to share what it is you put your hands to, the materials, and what it all means. We want to hear from you. Step away from the loom, pick up the phone, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848. And Lily, you mentioned different colors. Do any of those have a particular meaning?
You know, I don't know. I'm still learning, I guess. I'm only in my late 30s. My mother was a Chilkat weaver. She wove 11 robes in her lifetime, plus doing all sorts of other artwork. So I actually have my first full-size robe on the loom right now. I just shaped the outer edges to make the nose on this Chilkat face. You know, the yellow and blue, they go back so many hundreds of years that I don't know how that started. It's likely because those are the colors of dye that we could easily access in Alaska. There is record of some very sparing use of red, and I'm not sure how we got that red, but we'd never ever switched the red out for blue or yellow. It was always, you know, just the tongue of the wolf or just the very inside tongue of the raven. So likely because of the availability of our dyes or the things that we could dye with.
And I think it's really exciting to hear, you know, some of these details. And, you know, as time goes, sometimes methods, forms, materials, they evolve. And if there's something you'd like to say about that, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And Lily, what you're working on now, I'm sure, is pretty special. What does it mean to you? What you're putting on the loom, what you're putting your hands to, you know, what does it mean to you to be able to weave this item?
It feels like the work I was born to do. I don't know how to explain it other than that. I mean, it took me a while to get here, I guess. I sat with my mother a lot, and, you know, I followed her around and said, "What are you doing? Oh, what are you doing there?" And she taught me how to spin the warp first when I was a teenager, and, you know, had me winding balls and helping her dye things. So I got to do all of the baby steps before starting to weave. And I guess we have a practice before we sit down at the loom that we always say, of all the things I could be doing, I'm so grateful to be doing this. And then giving gratitude for, you know, my husband watching the children or the house being taken care of and all of those other things in our lives that can be aligned so that we can sit at our loom. And I guess that's, it's a way that we keep our clan stories alive. We keep our memories of our loved ones alive. I don't know. It's bigger than us. And it's powerful in its own self. Like, there's a practice in Chilkat weaving. We don't weave five-fingered hands. If we're going to depict a human hand in a Chilkat robe, it's always like that Berenstain Bear's hand where you have three fingers and a thumb. Because back in caveman times, you know, you would see the human handprint on the wall. And we don't need to put our human handprint in the weaving. Because just like Navajo weavers, you know, raccoons can't weave like this. Bears and wolves, they don't put their hands in the warp and weave. We don't have to put an extra five-fingered hand in there to put our handprint on there. We already know that it's made by a human being, and that is enough.
Wow. And Lily, is that something that was passed to you from your mother?
Yes, and her teacher, Jenny Clanott, the last master Chilkat weaver from Southeast Alaska, Jenny would yell that, actually. The first weaving my mom wanted to do, she wanted to do this five-fingered hand. And Jenny said, "No, no human hands. No, you take one of those fingers out." And she said, why? And she said, "You know human hands." And then, you know, through prayer and everything, that comes out. But we don't need to add our ego to this. It's enough. It's enough to just sit here at the loom and weave.
Wow, that sounds like a great lesson. Folks, maybe you have Chilkat weavers in your family. Any of them you'd like to talk about? And what did they say when they were at the loom? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Lily, we're going to take a call and say hi to Della in Juneau, Alaska, who's listening online. Della, thank you for giving us a ring. And what would you like to share about weaving?
Well, I'm very happy to be hearing Lily. We miss her terribly in Juneau, but we're so happy she's there participating in the show. And just want to send our love and hugs. And I'm so happy she's still working on all of her weavings. And I just started up my weaving again. I mainly weave red and yellow cedar bark. But I just wanted to say aloha, Lily.
Very nice. And Della, the piece that you're working on, how's it coming out? Or what are we seeing in it?
Well, I see a lot of the very beginnings of weaving that our ancestors have that has survived all these thousands of years through people like Lily, able to describe and to teach and to have the spirit of weaving from all of her ancestors. And that's what I see from my grandmother, who was a weaver. And it's a wonderful place to be in when we're weaving. It's a calming. It brings to us all these wonderful memories we have of our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, just the family and the people we're weaving for. So how, again, Lily, I'm so proud of you.
Lily, go ahead. If anything you want to say to Della.
Sorry, I had myself on mute. Thank you, Della, for calling in and saying hello. I'm so glad you're back at your weaving, too. It's funny how we go in these cycles of life, and sometimes we'll go like 6 weeks or 2 months without weaving. And doesn't it feel like your whole meditation falls away and you're missing this huge part of your calm life? Oh, I feel like that sometimes. It was almost 2 months where I wasn't weaving on this robe because of my mom being ill. And to come back, I'm just like, oh, this is my normal. This is my sanctuary. This is my, you know, breath that's like stabilized again. So thank you so much, Della, for calling in. And, you know, Della is actually an accomplished Ravenstail weaver as well. And she's, I think you did a Chilkat weaving, didn't you? So she's being, go ahead,
Della.
I said, yeah, I'm practicing. I haven't gotten very far. Maybe when Lily comes home, I'll sit with her. I'm just excited that she's on the show, and I wanted to let her know we're thinking of her and her family and always prayers.
All right,
thank
Della.
Thank you, Della.
Della, thank you for your call. Join the conversation, too, 1-800-996-2848. And Lily, I guess let's talk about Ravenstail weaving. Go ahead.
So Ravenstail weaving, some say that, well, most of us agree that Ravenstail weaving predates Chilkat weaving, and we kind of figured out that these two weavings are older than, guess what, older than our first American president, George Washington. So you go back all the way that far, and that's how old our robes are, even older than that because they had to have been made before they got found, right? So Ravenstail weaving is older than George Washington. It's different in the patterns that emerge on the robe itself. They're woven very similarly, where we have just the warp hanging loosely from the top bar of the loom, and there's no fastener at the bottom. There's no tension from the warp, so the warp is really hanging free. But Ravenstail weaving, when you look at it, you'll still have a border of black and a border of white sometimes. Sometimes that next border will be yellow. But then the inner design, instead of having form line designs and eyes and noses and things like that, and depictions of ravens in their, symbolic form that you could make in Chilkat weaving, a Ravenstail design, they use more geometric shapes, and they pull designs from the baskets that you might find in Southeast Alaska. You'll have many zigzags, squares, diamond shapes, those kind of things. So if you find two textiles in the Northwest Coast, these robes, and one is more geometric in nature, and one you can see these perfectly woven circles, the circles and raven shapes are Chilkat weaving, and the raven's tail is more geometric in nature.
Wow. I can't wait to look even more into that. I've gotten closer to the Chilkat just as we have been prepping for the show and just learning the stories behind it. And folks, anytime you look at something somebody has spent time on, especially weavings, what you're standing in front of as we're hearing is not only the beauty of how all this came together, but tradition, culture, even teachings, even, you know, seeing how a mother loves their child. Folks, anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848. What kind of story do weavings tell you? And you can also reach out to us, and maybe you just want to share what you're working on or something you've made. Send it to us. Send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're taking a look at Twitter and can't wait to see what you got to say to us. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Well, let's go ahead and bring in another weaver. We're going to weave the show some more. We're going to Tucson, Arizona to say hello to Navajo weaver Barbara Teller Ornelas. And it's our pleasure to have her here with us. Barbara, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
And Barbara, what kind of stories do weavings tell you?
You know, there's so many stories that go into our weavings. You can tell our Navajo history just by looking at weavings. You can tell what kind of history was happening within our people just by looking at the weavings. I mean, we went from just doing lines like the first phase blankets, and then we added pattern to it, and then we found colors from different places and to use it in the weaving. And also there's stories that come, you know, that my grandmother told me stories about my weaving. She taught me the songs and the prayers that go with everything. I mean, like when you set up a warp, you have a prayer and a song that go with it. When you're weaving, there's a song that goes with it, and prayers. When you finish, there's a prayer that goes with it. And there's a song that goes with the finishing. And taking it off the loom has a prayer and a song. And so these are things that were passed on in my family that I'm, you know, sharing with my son, who is also a weaver. And each family, and Navajo way, each family has their own stories and their own prayers and their own songs. And it's not a universal thing. It's all geared towards your family.
Barbara, I think that's a great way to think of it. And here in the Southwest, there's the Santa Fe Indian Market, and there's always a preview, and it's always exciting. You make your way going into it, and you see all of these beautiful creations and stories that our Native artists have brought. And then I always like to go to where the weaving is. And I look for your name and your family's name and your sister's name to just see, what are these guys up to this year? What have they put out? And anytime you look at some of the work out of your family, it's always exciting to just know there's more than what you're seeing here. There's all of this legacy and even, you know, love of family coming through. And so I think that's exciting. And I know there's a lot of collectors who also are listening right now. If you just want to call in and talk about what weavings maybe you've purchased and what it means to you, you can share that story too. 1-800-996-2848. And Barbara, I want to go back to learning about weaving and some of the things that were taught to you. What were you thinking when you were learning that, you know, there's a special way to do almost every single thing that you do when you're in front of the loom? What were you thinking about when you heard you have to treat all of this very special?
You know, I started learning probably when I was like 4 or 5 years old. My mom and my grandmother, my dad's mother, my Nali, they put me in front of a loom to play with it. And I don't really remember the thoughts I had at that point because I was too young to remember. But it was kind of like you kind of learn as you go. And you know how, like, when kids are small, you teach them their alphabets and their numbers and stuff, and pretty soon it's just like a normal everyday thing for them, for the kids. And weaving was like that for us. I mean, we were taught very, very young to where by the time we were like in teenage years, we already knew what we were doing, and people were like, how did you learn how to do this? And it's really hard to say this is exactly how it happened, because it just happened daily. you know, and I always remember sitting with my sister, Linda Teller Pete, and I used to my dad had built this loom for us, and it was a connecting loom, and she would sit on the other side, and I would sit, you know, from this side. And then, you know, the days when we were getting along, it was great. You know, we would weave. And then when we weren't getting along, you know, we'd use our tools to, you know, irritate each other. And my mother got tired of us fighting, so she put a sheet in between the weaving so we couldn't see each other, you know. And but we spent summers like that. Our father was a trader at Tugger Hill Trading Post. And so we had a lot of people coming to the post looking for weavings, and they would want to see a Navajo weaver. Of course, you know, everybody is at home doing their weaving, so and people assumed that Navajo weavers would be sitting out, you know, under the trees weaving by the trading posts just because of the postcards. You know, they see postcards like that, and they say, but we wanted to see Navajo weavers. And then my dad would say, well, my wife is weaving, you know, in a little house that we had. And so he would bring people over, and then my mom would show them the weaving and stuff. And, you know, when my mom first started out, she didn't speak English at all. And then by the time, you know, my dad was in his 30th year working, my mom was a pro at, you know, demonstrating. And my sister and I were kind of like props because our mother was a photographer. And she was a great weaver, and she was a great photographer. And she would have people come to the to our house. The weavers would come to our house because they knew my mother would take pictures for them. And my mom would take pictures. She would take three of them. She'd take one for the weaver, one for the trading post, and then one for her collection. And but she would have my sister and I dress up, you know, in these little tiny squaw dresses, and we would stand there and hold people's weavings, and they would take pictures. My mom would take pictures of us. So it was really a fun thing to do, you know, like, or when the tourists would come in, my father would give us like 10 minutes to get ready. And my mom would say, people are coming, put your clothes on, you know, so we hurry up and put our clothes on and stand there. And sometimes we forget to change our shoes, you know, so.
So you're standing sneakers.
So we're dressed really nice, and our shoes are just like real muddy and all kinds of good stuff. And, yeah.
Well, I think we're going to have you and your sister just sit down and tell more of these stories. And we got to see these photos. Barbara, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Also on the line with us, we have Lily Hope. And folks, we're going to continue this, but you're missing. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Taking a look at everything that goes into the process of weaving, the tradition, and I guess the good times too. You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to hearing your voice on air. Joseph Boyden says he's sorry he's eclipsed other voices with deeper Indigenous roots. The popular Canadian writer is under fire for becoming what he says the go-to person on Indigenous issues. That's after his Indigenous heritage was called into question. On the next Native America Calling, we'll take a closer look at this. We hope you'll join us.
Sky may fall, stars crash down, trees cut down, seeds sipping. Support by Utah Dene Bekea. President Obama has heard Native American voices, and we thank him for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument. The Bears Ears Living Cultural Landscape protects our ancestors' lands and provides collaborative management with tribes to ensure our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Thank you, President Obama, for standing with tribes and fellow Americans to make Bears Ears National Monument a place where Native prayers are alive. Learn more at protectbearsears.org.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isla de Pueblo, and today we're focusing on Native American and Alaska Native weaving traditions. This hour, we're taking a diverse look at different tribes and why they step to or look either to devote hours of their time intertwining materials. And if you want to join us, tell us about your weaving. We want you to. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Tell us what it means to you and what is the story of the Native rug or woven item from a different community that you cherish. Tell us about it. Our number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line from Tucson, Arizona, we have Navajo weaver Barbara Teller Ornelas. Also with us from Pagosa Springs, Colorado, is Lily Hope, and she is a weaving and teaching artist, and she is Tlingit. And I want to welcome both of them back. And Barbara, you mentioned earlier that some of your family, you've passed on this tradition of weaving, and I'd like you to tell a little bit more of that, of, you know, when you have your loved one who's also learning this and what it means and why we got to make sure we're teaching what we know to those who we love.
Yeah, I was taught by my grandmother and my mother and my sister. I learned the stories and the legends from my grandmother, basic weaving from my mother, and then techniques and design from my sister. And so when I had children, I started my daughter, Sierra, when she was like around 4 or 5 years old, just playing with the weaving, and then I started my son when he was around 11. I never really intended to teach him, but he kind of gravitated towards it. And I remember Lily saying that she feels like she was born to do this. I always felt that the same way, that I was born to do this, that this was my calling. And my grandmother always said that you're going to be a great weaver, then this is, you know, this is your calling. And I never believed it until I was teaching my son. And just the way he gravitated towards the weaving and how he seemed to already know what I was telling him, that told me that, you know, this is what my grandmother saw in me. And for me to teach both my children was probably the greatest accomplishment I've ever done. And now we have a 15-year-old grandniece, and my sister Linda and I are teaching her to, because she's our seventh generation. My kids are sixth generation, of course. Linda and I are fifth generation, and so Linda and I make a point to teach our young ones to weave, as long as they know the basics, as long as they know techniques and design. You know, they can do whatever they want. And I remember my daughter saying that, Mom, I can't be a weaver like you. And I go, that's okay, you know, as long as you know how to do it. So when you have children, you teach them. You can do other things. And it turns out she's a great writer. You know, she's a writer on a TV show on NBC called Superstore. And she's a producer also on that show. And she... You know, she weaves with her words on a great show. And my son is an accomplished weaver. He's an award-winning weaver. And I'm really, really proud of him. His name is Michael.
Folks, be on the lookout for Marco, Michael Ornelas. And yeah, Sierra does weave really well, and she is so funny. We got a caller on the line. We're going to go to, folks. Join us, 1-800-996-2848. Let's say hi to Daniel in, I believe it's Casadero, California. Daniel, thank you for calling in. Go ahead. You're on air.
Yeah, hi. I was so privileged to, back in the 80s, put together a group of people here up in Casadero. We had a benefit for the Navajo people down in Big Mountain because they were being starved out by the fence put in, of course, to stop the people there to, in the winter, you know, bring their sheep across to these lands for protein, and they put up that fence, that crazy fence, and the fence, of course, was torn out, and they made that movie, Broken Rainbow, and so we responded with bringing food, 100-pound sacks of grain, chainsaws. We went and cut firewood for them, for the elders. We couldn't do it very well. And we actually brought quite a bit of good energy with us to, you know, go down there and just help them because they were so downtrodden by all this terrible stuff being done to them. And I was lucky enough to acquire, and when I was there, a Roberta Black Goat blanket from a famous weaver, Roberta Blackgoat. Do you know her?
I've heard of her, and that's quite an honor to receive something like that. And Daniel, you know, we do, when we get the story behind why somebody has one of these pieces in their home, either using it functionally or it's something being passed down, I think even more stories open up. And I'm glad when you look at that rug, you remember that. Daniel, thank you for your call there in California. Join us again by calling 1-800-996-2848. Let's take another call. We're going to say hi to Nita in Wasilla, Alaska, listening on KNBA. Nita, thank you for calling. And what would you like to add?
Good morning. I wanted to say hi to Lily. This is Nita. And I wanted to talk about kind of the value of our weavers. We almost had a break in the tradition, and a long time ago, several people revitalized the process of weaving and dedicated their lives to the education of it, and her mom was one of them, and actually, we just lost two weavers within a week here this last month, and, you know, they don't just do it for themselves. The weavers are kind of like our national treasures. When they weave for all of our communities, all of our people, and they're keeping our stories intact. And it's almost kind of like a holy position because what they're weaving, these robes are so powerful. They have so much power to them that when the owner of the robe passes away, it's considered a'u, and it's imbued with the energy or the spirit of the person that had that robe and wore that robe. And then it becomes kind of a living manifestation of our ancestors so that when we bring them out, those robes are our ancestors that are with us today, even if they're hundreds or, you know, hundreds of years old or older. And it's part of our history. The raven's tail weaving and the design and the finger weaving style itself helps us to know that we're actually related to the Maori people. And that's part of my family's story is honoring that relationship, ancient relationship to the people who populated the Pacific Islands. And so I just wanted to tell Lily that, you know, I have a lot of gratitude for her dedicating her life to this style and helping to not only preserve our culture, but help to perpetuate our culture. So Ganeshji Shaflin.
Very nice. Nita, thank you for your call. Lily, anything you want to tell Nita?
Thank you for calling in, and thank you for your kind words. You know, it's funny that it took me so long to get here because, and really, it was my mother's passing that made me go, oh, well, I think that I should probably move forward with this because of that, because that there are so few of us. And yes, there are hundreds of people who know how to chilcat weave, But if there's a collector out there or someone who wants a full-size robe, it's such a large time commitment and energetic commitment to this. You kind of have to have someone who's paying all of your bills or have someone who's going to commission you, and you have to quit your other job. Or, you know, it's hard to be a full-time weaver. So, it's intense, and I thought that I had other things to do in my life, you know. And then my mother left, and I said, okay, well, somebody has to keep teaching. And I love that. If I had to do one or the other, I would teach. You know, I love the social interaction. I love, you know, sharing the stories from Jenny and my mother and the lineage of teachers. And that social interaction, kind of how Barbara was talking about her sister weaving with her and that joy, and then also the like, oh, I don't want to be around you today, you know, and how to move through that and be together, making art together and carrying our traditions forward. That's powerful stuff. It's really
indeed
great.
Thank you for that. Let's take another call out of Wasilla. We're going to say hi to John, listening on KNBA in Alaska. John, thank you for giving us a ring. And go ahead, you're on air.
Hello, hi. My name is John. I'm a baleen basket weaver, do a different type of weaving. And I could totally relate to what you're talking about with the weaving, with connecting with our ancestors and past, because doing the same, keeping it alive. I learned it from my grandmother and my mother. And I went away, for long story short, went away to school in Washington when I was 18 years old, and then came back during break, and then realized my grandmother wasn't going to be around much longer to make baleen baskets. And I woke up one morning and asked her, you know, can I learn how to make them? And she was just so happy to, that I was wanting to learn. And I never went back to school, and I've been doing baleen baskets ever since 1989.
Wow, John, thank you for giving us a ring. And, it's great to hear. It doesn't matter the medium. This story of the need to carry on this tradition, it comes out. Folks, if you'd like to share anything on weaving, or maybe you're hearing this and you relate it to the art form that you like to delve in, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And, there's also people who make sure some of this gets out even further in the world. And we're going to go to a voice now here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We have Marcella Hale. She is the treasurer for the Navajo Weavers Association, and she is Dene. Welcome to the hour, Marcella.
Thank you for having me.
And Marcella, tell us a little bit more about getting these weavings out in the world. You have details on a Navajo rug auction in Crown Point. Tell us a little bit about that and just how it really does give more exposure to all of this that we're hearing about today.
Okay, the Navajo rug auction happened about 1963 in Crown Point. It started out from the trading post of the Palmers trading post out in Crown Point. And it grew where a lot of our weavers took their rugs to the trading post to get the best money they could for their weavings. And what happened was, within time, the Palmers started collecting more rugs and more rugs, and they wanted to know what they could do with all these rugs. So they started an auction, and that's where the Crown Point Rug Auction was established back in about around 1963. So from then on to present, every month we have a rug auction. It's every second Friday of every month. And we get weavers from all over the Navajo Reservation, even from metropolitan cities like Albuquerque, Phoenix, Tucson, Flagstaff. We get weavers from those areas as well. And what we do as a Weavers Association is, we have the weavers coming in to the rug auction, and we tag their rugs, and we try to get the best bid that we could for them. And the bids range from $10 to about $5,000.
Wow,
and
that's quite a range. And Marcella, when is the next one?
The next rug auction is tonight. It it starts at 4 o'clock. The bidders can, or the buyers can, go and review the rugs, view the rugs, and then our auction actually starts at 7 o'clock.
And Marcella, when you're having one of these, what kind of things are you seeing, and what kind of families or artists or weavers are coming to this center?
We get a lot of weavers from Two Gray Hills area. A lot of the buyers, they like the Two Gray Hill patterns. And for the Two Gray Hills, the town, you know, that's where the pattern comes from. And we also have buyers looking for the Ganado designs as well. And you get a lot of buyers who are looking for figures, like ceremonial dance figurines, which are like yebiches and Kachina prints, or sceneries. That's what a lot of the buyers are looking for.
And Marcella, are you a weaver yourself?
I'm a beginner weaver. I started at a college, which is Navajo Technical University, is where I started. They do have introductory weaving, and one of the well-known weavers from there is the instructor. Her name is Bonnie Benali, that I've learned from.
And we heard a little bit about both Lily and Barbara's process and what it means to sit at the loom. Anything you want to share about, you know, what you observe or what you're thinking about?
What I observe as a beginner weaver is sitting at a loom, you can't be unhappy. You have to have that strive where you're happy, you're motivated, you're putting in your hard and soft goods into your weaving is what it is. And you want to bring that also, that tradition that's brought down from generation to generation to you to, you know, set up your design on how you want that weaving. And also, you know, generation to generation and all of the what goes on with that, you know, with the seasons, there's certain times that you're not supposed to weave and there's certain times that you're supposed to weave. Like when it's raining, you're not supposed to weave. You know, those type of things, you know, I've learned from going to a college and learning the intros of begin weaving.
Wow. And so we just heard from, I guess, a student of weaving. Marcella Hale is with us on the line from the Navajo Weavers Association. Lily and Barbara, I know both of you sit in that other side of being a teacher and passing this on. Barbara, you also do workshops all over the country when it comes to weaving. Is there anything you'd like to share about what you hope your students are learning or just the people who are coming to learn from you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister and I teach all over the world, over the country, and we tell stories, you know, like the story I told you about my mom being a photographer and stuff. That's the kind of stories that we share with our students. We teach basic weaving. We teach intermediate weaving and then also the fine weaving. We've had students that have been our students for like 16 years. My sister and I have been teaching for 20 years. And we take on a lot of Navajo students, and we encourage them to learn their history, you know, their family stories, their family songs, and, you know, find out, research what, you know, kind of weaving their family was known for. And we have a scholarship program in Ottawa, California, at the School of Arts, where my sister and I have been teaching for 20 years. And we take in scholarships, Navajo students, to come and take weaving. And we have, like, mother and daughter teams, mother and son, sisters, niece, and aunts that come up to do weaving, and it's for 2 weeks. And if anybody's interested in that, just to go online for idlewildarts.org, you can find an application there to fill that out. And we also, I try to help Navajo students that want my help, and they can directly contact me, and I'm more than willing to help anybody who's willing to learn, you know, because I feel like I've already accomplished everything I need to accomplish. My kids are doing really well, and they're both excellent weavers. My granddaughter, Roxanne, is doing really well, and she's also a great weaver, and she's also a student at Ottawa School of Arts. And so I feel like in my family, there's not much more I can do, but I feel like there's a lot of me that I can help Navajo students to learn the process of weaving and to learn a little bit about their history.
Very nice. Thank you for that, Barbara. And Lily, anything to add?
I would say I'm on the same road with Barbara here, that it's the teaching that really gets me excited. And I sometimes get messages. I'm part of this Facebook group. If you're interested in Raven's Tail or Chilkat weaving, there's a Facebook group called Raven's Tail and Chilkat Weaving, and it is open if you want to study more. We often post photographs of progress or ask questions of each other, and often when I see someone struggling, or how do I make this corner, or I don't know how to make this turn back and go the other direction, you know, I've always been a Raven's Tail weaver, what do I do? And it was late one evening, it was 11 o'clock at night in Colorado, but only 9 in Alaska, and I messaged the weaver who posted a question, and I said, if you want to FaceTime right now, I'm awake, and let's FaceTime, because I can totally walk you through that without some, you know, it's so much easier to just be able to show her. So she said yes, and I said, let's do it, and that fills my heart so much to be able to help, you know, even in the middle of the night, as long as I'm awake, you know, don't call me while I'm sleeping. But that's how we know that this will move forward. In fact, it reminds me of Jenny. Back in 1986, Jenny Clanat, the last master Chilkat weaver, led this class, and there were 12 or 13 women present. And she said, gee, I feel like I've waited my whole life for this, that I can go now, that you guys will carry it into the future.
Wow, that's great. And it's also exciting to just hear how, I guess, you're using technology, too. And it doesn't matter how far you are from someone, you know, you can still, you know, give this information or share these great things. And that's a lot to be celebrated, Lily. Ladies, we are getting close to the end of the hour. And anything you want to leave us with, Lily, let's go ahead and start with you.
If you have the inclination to learn how to Raven's Tail or Chilkat weave, do it. Don't wait. Find a teacher and do it, because this is all we have. This is all the time we have.
Thank you, Lily. And Barbara, what do you want people to know about weaving, what it means, or anything else? Go ahead, Barbara.
Weaving is my life. It's what gives me my balance. And, you know, I wake up every morning thankful to the Creator that is giving me the talents of weaving, and I would be totally lost without it. And it's a gift that's been given to me, and I feel so blessed to have it, and I feel so blessed to share it. And if anybody wants to learn, you know, just get a hold of my sister and I, and we have a website, and it's NavajoWeavers.com. And, you know, we have a lot of classes scheduled there, so feel free to contact us, you know, because especially Navajo students, because we're more than willing to share what we have with you.
And Barbara, anything to that person who used to weave and is meaning to get back to it?
You know, and for somebody who has kind of gotten away from weaving, but feels the need to be pulled back in, don't wait, do it, because it will give you your balance. It will give you your history back, and it will fulfill your life. And if you have children, if you have grandchildren, you know, take it upon yourself to learn how to do this and teach your kids and teach your grandchildren, because it's up to us to move this forward. You know, we can't have other people who are not Navajos teaching Navajo weaving. We're the ones who should be doing this. We're the ones who should be passing it on. So if you feel the need to weave, to learn how you know, get a hold of a Navajo weaver. There's a lot of Navajo weavers that are teachers, and we're spread all over the reservation and in the urban areas. You know, get a hold of some of us. And they're teaching Navajo weaving at the Phoenix Indian Center. Velma Craig and Cheryl, I forget her last name, but they're teaching Navajo weaving there. And Roy Cady teaches Navajo weaving. Mary Lou Schultz, Tanava Natani, I forget her first name. And Irene Nigel. And, you know, these she's at the Dene College. And so all these people are weavers. They're an accomplished weavers, and they're teachers. You know, look for them and ask questions. And, you know, these things are available to everybody. And if you feel the need to become a weaver or continue to be a weaver, get a hold of us. You know, we're more than willing to share what we have.
And that's a great invitation. And I'm sure also folks, the Navajo Weavers Association, just as we heard from Marcella, is connecting a lot of people together too. And again, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the hour, but we do appreciate you tuning in. And if there was something that you wanted to add, but you couldn't get away from the conversation, go online now. Put your comments up. Facebook, Twitter, our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And again, thanks to all the people who shared their knowledge today. Lily Hope, Barbara Teller Ornelas, and also Marcella Hale. And it's Friday, so we're going to invite you back next week for another lineup of great issues and topics. Monday, we're going to go to an issue that has been booming out of Canada about Indigenous identity, and we hope you'll tune in for that too. Our executive producer is Art Hughes, senior producer is Monica Brain, associate producer is Andy Murphy, Derek Toledo is our engineer. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We'll be back next week.
Bonjour, Nigan and Nabin, Gawin Gada opime tusin wa du deman, Gada bajatun mazana igas, jidaba igasiwan anishina bewian, Dangigwanane again, Ganoj 1-800-318-2596, Gema Mawadishiwan, healthcare.gov, Gawund in Nagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
A world-class education is within your reach at SIPI, the Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute in Albuquerque. This historic National Indian Community College, located in the center of New Mexico's agriculture and technology corridor, offers affordable two-year degrees in science, engineering, liberal arts, and career technical training. Spring enrollment information is at sipi.edu. You can expect success when you take charge of your future today.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.